Welcome to the People Stack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and creator of People Stack Academy. My guest for this episode is Don McDougall, executive director of Code for Philly. Welcome, Don.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Did I get your name and your title right?
That's right.
Excellent. So let's jump right in. And why don't you tell us a little bit about Code for Philly and what you do there?
Absolutely. It started, Chris Alfano founded it back in end of 2012, started the brigade, kind of took over where the Code for America fellows had left off. And for anyone who's not familiar with Code for America and how the fellowships work, it's basically a technologist coming into city government and kind of disrupting how they do things, hopefully in a productive way, to say this is how things could be done, and bringing in some modernization to how government works. And that happens at a very high level. And the brigades, Code for Philly being a brigade as it first started, was sort of the boots on the ground, keeping the momentum going of this beginning relationship between city government and technology and the people who live in the city, citizens or residents, as you'd call them. So over the last 4 years, the community has really evolved. It began, you know, fairly small of like-minded people who kind of were already experienced technologists. And over the past 2 years or so, we've really grown to be pretty, at least, you know, we try to reach out and be very diverse in terms of the expertise that we bring into the community, and just really trying to co-create with government. And so we meet every week to do work on different projects that people have. We also do bigger events. We just had a large hackathon to bring new folks into the mix and to get people energized over the course of a weekend, or in this case, it will be a month-long hackathon. And then we have just ongoing relationship building that we do with different departments in the city, as well as different civic organizations around Philadelphia. And we are continuing to grow, and hopefully we'll continue to have even greater impact in the way that citizens are able to affect their government.
Excellent. So what is your typical day, if there is a typical day? Essentially, what do you do as executive director?
Sure. So Code for Philly is still 100% volunteer, including myself. So we are in the process of creating structures so that we can grow more. So for me, you know, as executive director, I really kind of have my hands in just about everything from the events that we do, thinking about what programming we have and adding new programming, doing things like we're building out our leadership team all the time, you know, things like building those relationships personally. So I guess there isn't exactly a typical day, but a lot of conversations with people who are from city departments about how we might partner and what that might look like, conversations with the economic players in the city, people who, you know, there are lots of companies who are interested in improving the way Philly works so that, you know, it's better for the place that they live. And so there's really this shared feeling of improving the place that we all live for, this kind of greater good. So a lot of conversations about how does the community fit into that, and then a lot of also just recruiting, bringing people into civic tech, because it's still in many places, in many communities, it's still a pretty new concept. So just kind of debunking this myth that you have to be a coder to be part of Code for Philly, and bringing in other communities into the fold might have specialized interests, but we're trying to get them more interested in our work. So a lot of relationships, a lot of conversations, and then of course, you know, kind of the day-to-day, you know, typical stuff of, you know, making sure that there's food at our hack nights and kind of stuff like that, kind of runs the gamut.
Got it. You touched on something that I wanted to talk a little bit more, which is you don't need to know how to code in order to help and be involved in civic tech. So let's talk a little bit more about that. So for those who are listening, who don't have a coding background and want to sort of play a bigger role in shaping the tech ecosystem more generally, or more specifically getting involved in civic tech, how can they help? Or put more simply, I can't code, what can I do?
Yeah, it's something I hear a lot, actually. I love Code for Philly. I love what you guys do, but I'm not a coder, so I can't be part of it. Yeah. And it's such a funny statement for me because I have never programmed in my life. I am not a technologist in the kind of traditional sense of a technologist at all. I came from a background of social sciences and more of an academic track. So for me, it's a pretty dear message to my heart to say that you 100% do not need to be a coder to be part of Code for Philly. And in fact, we desperately need other types of talent to come into the mix to make projects successful, because it's a lot of moving parts to do software development or product development that meets an actual need. So oftentimes I'll tell people, tell them that kind of generally, that you don't need to be a coder, but typical ways of getting involved in a civic tech project that isn't, coding or engineering, things like design or user experience. I mean, how do people use the product? How will they, what's a real actual journey for them that they can want to adopt the product? This is also really important for government, because if you are designing something for government, the way that they use it, and the ease of use and the ease of adoption is really important for them to actually use the tool. Things like, communications, telling the story of a product and being able to say why it's important, what need is it meeting, and tell that very articulately so that you have identified who this product is for and how you think that they'll use it. Another critical component of any successful project. And then, of course, somebody who can be a liaison between different stakeholders, somebody who can go to a civic group or a city department or, a local small business and say, this is why this is important. This is why you should adopt it and maybe even maintain it and become partners on the project. Things like project management. That's another huge one. How do we get this done on time? How do we hit milestones? It seems really obvious, I think, when we talk about it, but it's interesting how, even though, despite it being what feels obvious sometimes, I don't see it in practice too often. People come together based on, oh, I'm really interested in this and I want to make an impact here. This is what I'm motivated to help on. But five engineers and no other help on a project, ultimately ends up in something that stagnates and doesn't make the impact that anyone wants and doesn't become a useful act of anyone's time. So lots of different ways of getting involved to make a project successful.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear a little bit more about your background. You said you have a social science, more academic background, and how Sure. you think that might have shaped your direction and some of the things that you just mentioned, like communication skills and project management skills. My guess is that some of those things, that your background has helped you in some of those areas. So talk a little bit more about that. I'd like to hear a little bit more about your path to this, where you
sure,
are.
Sure, yeah, mm-hmm. Of course. I did my undergrad degree at Drexel University, and they have a custom designed major program, which basically means that you can create the curriculum for a major yourself and decide what the focus is. And mine really centered on social marketing and communications, and it later on became very focused on urbanism and politics and civic participation, and ultimately I named it sustainable urbanism in the sense of thinking about cities as these networks, not just environmentally, but also socially and civically, politically, etc. So my path was really shaped by a lot of community research. I, as an undergrad, was involved in a project where we went door to door and knocked on people's doors to get survey answers about just what they thought about the place that they lived and their perceptions of environmental health. So for me, that was a pretty influential time in my life because it put such a premium on the input from the community. And at the same time, I was studying about doing some urban studies on how planners who use these community-based practices would actually go to communities and get their input. And even if they didn't use that to inform the design, ultimately, if that didn't translate into their final product, mm-hmm. It still informed in general their practices. So I was really influenced by this sort of user-centered or human-centered design philosophy. And I think that translated into my desire for community organizing and desire to see a community that was really talented technically, but also had the just a really passionate mission that could bring people together and get them to mobilize around shared shared issues.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I come from a social sciences academic background as well, so I was curious about that personally. But that's really interesting. So you said you went to Drexel, is that what it was?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So sustainable urbanism. I love that. that's kind of what you landed on. And
that's
so,
right.
To what extent? So have you been in Philly for most of your life, all of your life?
Actually, I'm originally from California, and I lived there most of my life, and I've been in Philadelphia the last 5 years.
Got it. So I was just curious about your thoughts around just cities in general, but cities in tech more specifically. I think Philly is a really interesting sort of petri dish, if you will, for the tech movement. Compare it to like where I am in Boston, where it's kind of a little bit more established, and there's different kinds of dynamics going on. But I'm just wondering, just in general, what your thoughts are and thinking about when we think about civic engagement and also sustainable urbanism. To what extent have you thought about that in like the intersection of that with like the tech world and the different cities around, say, the U.S. and how it might be the same or different. Do you know where I'm kind of going with like this? What does it mean to be a city, and what does it mean to be a tech city? And what thoughts do you have around that?
It's a really great question. So Code for Philly is not alone. There's other brigades that are of similar size in different cities. Boston is actually one of them, Oakland, San Francisco. And it is, you know, the interesting thing about cities is how they each sort of have their own story. It's not like states that are kind of big and they're a little bit more fixed in different ways. They kind of are a little more comparable to other states in terms of how they work and how they operate. Mm-hmm. Cities are very, very unique in the people who are there, the mayor, the city council, the political structure, but also just the culture. So Philadelphia, I think, is pretty open to new things. You know, it's a city of firsts. So having that history, having that as a really big part of our mythology, if you will, I think that influences heavily the people who are here today. I think also just our proximity to a younger population of people, because there are so many universities here. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we have probably one of the highest ratios of student, you know, universities to land mass probably in the country. Mm-hmm. And so just having young, fresh minds always at close proximity, you know, that has really led to this startup world and this technology boom that we've seen in the last few years. Mm-hmm. So I do think that Philadelphia is pretty unique just in the sense of how it's positioned, of being pretty ripe for technological innovation and the city of firsts and investment, young minds, et cetera. But then there's also this really rich history of volunteerism that makes people incredibly community-based and so very willing to help another person, the city of brotherly love. There's really that mantra as well. And so you couldn't really say that about just any city. And so it is interesting to look at the different support that other brigades have gotten, whether it be from the community itself, from government, from different companies around the area, in their cities. I think it might be a little bit cheesy, and maybe this is sort of a, you know, cheat to get out of this answering this question properly, but I do really think that that intersection and the way that it manifests itself, it just is really dependent on the story of the city in the past and what the story of the city is that's being woven today by the people who are there today.
Yeah. And what about this, the volunteerism? I want to think about this a little bit more. So if you think about like the evolution of like tech within a city, but also like more specifically thinking about Code for Philly as well, you had mentioned that right now it's 100% volunteer. Do you see, or do you want to see it moving more toward being a non-volunteer organization, in other words, with actual employees, or would you rather see it mean volunteer as a way of sort of bringing in people and engaging the community. What are your thoughts around that?
It's it's another great question. It's not an easy answer either, mm-hmm. because especially when you start out more on the grassroots side, Code for Philly really means a lot of things to a lot of people. You know, people kind of take it on and take on the ideals of it and make different decisions about it, what it means for them. Mm-hmm. For me, what I would really like to see is a little bit of both. I mean, I mm-hmm. think there's really a space for a volunteer context for this work where people can have a little bit of freedom, a little less pressure to play with technology, to learn from one another, to build something that they might not otherwise build if they were constrained to timelines and specific feature requirements, et cetera, et cetera. And the flip side of that is that I do think that when you're talking about sustainability and talking about keeping this going, or, you know, let alone scaling and growing, you have to have something that helps support that growth. And as you get bigger, you know, you have to have some sort of income stream so that you can pay somebody to be the consistency that really needs to be an anchor for any volunteer group. I've heard of groups that do all volunteer at scale really successfully. Mm-hmm. I don't think that is really the path for us. I think what we just need is a balance between that volunteer space as well as the kind of more structured organizational space.
So do you spend 100% of your time on Code for Philly, or do you have a quote-unquote day job as well?
I have one of those day jobs. But luckily for me, my day job is it's not too far off from what I do for Code for Philly, at least mm-hmm. in terms of mission, how it's mission-driven. I work for a company called GovDelivery, and they do digital communications for all levels of government, from federal to state to local. And they're very, very focused on how government can change lives for more people and serve residents better. So I do have that day job, but Code for Philly is just something that I have been really passionate about for a long time, and I kind of always say this story of it really kept me in Philly. It really grounded me in a place and in a community in a way that I don't think I would have had otherwise. It's sort of quote unquote in my free time, but oftentimes it ends up being almost feels like job number two.
Sure. I could definitely relate to that. Hey there, folks. We'll get back to the interview in two shakes of a lamb's tail. But first, are you a tech manager? Do you lead teams of geeks through long-term complex projects? If so, check out my free tech leadership webinar where I share the 5-step game plan my clients used to command 200K plus salaries while upping their free time by 20%. Learn strategies for becoming a leadership master and evoking the best performance from every team member, leaving you gushing with pride. To reserve your spot, go to genbunk.com/webinar. That's genbunk.com/webinar. Without further ado, please enjoy the remainder of the interview. On the Code for Philly mission statement, it says, at Code for Philly, process is the product. And that really stood out to me as interesting, and it reminded me a lot of stuff just in general. Yeah. So one of the things that it reminded me of is sort of thinking about the destination and the journey, and that it's really the journey, and it's not necessarily about that destination. The destination might change. And also what made me think about it, and what sort of drove me to it, is as a small business owner, as an entrepreneur, there's a lot of talk about process and product. You got to have the process, you got to have the product as well, and then people as right. well. That's the Marcus Lemonis thing, if people watch right. The Prophet, right? That's his thing. But I really was drawn to this, process is the product. So talk a little bit more about what that means to you, and if I'm interpreting it correctly, or if there is a right or wrong way to interpret it.
Yeah, absolutely. I really, this was something that I wanted to put as part of our mission statement, mostly because what I was saying before of Code for Philly sort of means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. People, I think, maybe didn't understand what it was that we were doing or what we were trying to do. And so, you know, probably with the best of intentions, we were getting a lot of advice or questions or sort of, you know, a little bit of pushing on to say, oh, well, you need to deliver products and this is what you do. And, you know, like if your measurement and your outcomes are how many apps you get launched and put into the hands of institutions. And the reality is that for the community that we're building, it's not about any of that. I mean, and this is to help level set for the volunteers who walk in the doors too. It's not about what your end product is, because you might not even ever get there. Mm-hmm. What we're really interested in at this community level is your feeling of, one, you have some space to learn and build community with other people who are in the city, your neighbors, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then also at the same time, feel like you can have some impact on this public space and the dialogue in the public space, and be civically engaged without having to go through politics and without being limited to twice a year when you vote, and without having to be, you know, limited to being able to volunteer and be civically engaged on nights and weekends when you have time in that specific time frame. It's really, you know, what it's meant to free up and say, the important piece is, you know, being able to have, being able to be civically engaged and be able to have that learning. So focusing a little bit more on the individual benefit of the community member versus what other people maybe want from Code for Philly.
Yeah. And as you were talking, that there's such a parallel to the, so the parallel that I'm seeing is, and I've spoken, one of the groups who I work with, more specifically, is software engineering managers. So they're the folks who lead the teams of geeks who write the code. And so I have conversations with them about lots of things, including performance measurement. How do we rate the performance of software engineers? And so there is this sort of, what's easy to do is just to say, how many apps have you launched? How many lines of code have you written? But in the end, you can have an engineer who wrote, you know, millions of lines of code, but that didn't really amount to anything, right? So then, yeah, the conversation turns exactly to where you say it should be, which is about, it's about engagement, it's about satisfaction, it's about involvement, and those kinds of things are very nebulous. They're harder to measure. They're harder to put your finger on. Although we certainly try as a former survey researcher. You know, there's employee engagement surveys that are out there for sure. But I think that there has been this sort of shift in the way that we're talking about how do we measure what we're doing when we're talking about tech. That it's not about those sort of really easy measurable things, how many apps, but it's about that engagement. And so to the extent that civic engagement for you is the outcome, or if you're talking about like a software engineering org, it's employee engagement or customer engagement, that there's been a lot more talk around engagement lately. And it's very interesting to see those parallels.
Yeah, and I would also add to that, this message becomes even more important when the main deliverable for somebody who has a different set of expertise is inherently intangible. So it's really easy to measure an engineer's contribution to a project, or maybe even somebody who does design that's very visual and something that you can concretely point to. But if you're a person who's helping do research, or if you're a person who's even just helping shift the way that a person thinks about the project and what the kind of like core philosophy of, you know, theory of change is, and you're somebody who's providing insider knowledge or subject matter expertise, that's incredibly hard to measure. And that's not really recognized if, you know, the only thing that matters in a project is the end, you know, the end app. It doesn't really appreciate or recognize how many other contributions went into that project and that product before it was ultimately launched.
Yep. So it's the process. It's the process, not the product. Yep. Or the process is the product. Yeah. I like thinking of it that way. I like that. So Civic Hacker, This is all very new to me. And as I was reading through and listening to what you're saying, I get sort of at a very broad level, at a very basic level, I think I get what you're saying. But what does it mean to be a civic hacker? And what would you say your number one goal is as a civic hacker?
It's definitely a sticky term because it is a little bit loaded at the same time. Mm. You know, there's a lot of connotation around hacking and how it's meant to be malicious and kind of do something that we're not intending. The idea really with civic hacker, or, you know, other people have referred to it as hacking. This play on words that, when I first was identifying as a civic hacker, it just felt incredibly clever to me. But it's really sort of, there's not a great way to define it without it being like an incredibly long explanation, but really it's this feeling of ownership, right? Or this feeling of your ability to affect change, even if it's not through traditional formats or if it's not through, you know, the status quo. It's, you can maybe even equate it to a disruptor, or, you know, some people might call it an innovator. Civic innovation is often closely tied with civic hacking. And in terms of what your goal is, you know, I think that it's really about getting your voice heard as a citizen, as a person who lives in a place, and being able to really affect change in a meaningful way. And so you can, you know, also look at parallels of other forms of civic engagement, but hacking really gets at this technology piece of it. And what I think is so cool about civic hacking is that our assumptions about what it means to be civically engaged are really challenged by it. You know, I think before civic tech got so popular, our assumptions about being civically engaged meant you voted and you were really informed about the political system. And, you know, even with volunteering, maybe you went on the weekend to pass out, you know, food at a homeless shelter, or whatever it might be, kind of these traditional modes, and kind of challenges that assumption about how you can be involved in the public space to say, actually, I'm going to use my skills and my talents and introduce a challenge to what our assumptions are about how things work and how things have to work. It's definitely not a succinct explanation. So I'm sorry, I don't have a better one-liner for you. But my goal for civic hackers is, one, for them to feel like they can make a difference and can make a change. But for me personally, my number one goal is making this ideology sustainable. You know, it's really been referred to as a movement, and bringing sustainability to the people who are moving this initiative forward, I think, is my greatest goal. And hopefully, you know, we can actually change the civic infrastructure and change the way people can participate in the places that the systems that they interact with and affect the place that they live.
Great. And I was poking around the Code for Philly website, and you have some examples of projects there. So if folks are interested in some of the specifics, they can go there and poke around. But can you just name a couple, like name a few examples of how, for example, the folks who are involved in Code for Philly have, say, written programs or whatever it might be to help make Philly a better place to live?
Absolutely. I can give you a few. So we have a lot of projects that use open data, so bringing some transparency to the way government works. So we have actually one of our most recent projects called Leverage uses campaign finance data, and it uses some visualization tools to show the flow of campaign finance dollars and just bring transparency to how do people get elected, how much money is spent on campaigns and elections. Mm-hmm. And they're doing a lot of great work just as a team to go out to stakeholders and bring that transparency and awareness to campaign finance. We also have a project that was adopted by the Committee of 70, which is another organization that is very, it works basically to bring transparency to elections. And this project, they did some very direct research to find out who ward leaders are. It's called Philly Ward Leader Baseball Cards. In Philadelphia, there's something called a ward leader, and basically they are very influential in who gets voted for at the end of the day into mm-hmm. elected offices, and nobody knows who they are. So it's very interesting to know that there are some influential players that we don't know who they are, how they're sort of get to that spot. And then another one that's a little more active in terms of collecting data, Cycle Philly, which is a project that was started, I think, around 2013 or 2014. And the idea was that with a mobile app, you could track your ride all around the city and then actually use the data that was collected. And they had partnered with our local municipal planning company, organization. And they actually use that data to inform the way that they did planning research and planning surveys and how they decided where bike lanes went. So things like that, some things that are more active in collecting data and actually influencing decisions in a very real way, but then also transparency and awareness. Those are some immediate projects that come to mind.
Great. So Code for Philly is a nonpartisan organization, correct?
Correct.
How hard is it to stay nonpartisan?
You know, for us, you know, on the Code for Philly side, everything is member driven. So it's more of just kind of watching and making sure that the people, you know, the community members who are driving projects are being as, you know, balanced as possible. Sometimes there's just a lack of data. So for the Philly Ward Leader Baseball Cards, they had started with the Democratic side and the Republicans were like, why aren't the Republicans on there? Mm-hmm. And our member was like, I just don't have the data yet, but it's coming, I promise.
Okay.
So we try to, you know, we try to facilitate conversation around these topics, around democracy. But it can, you know, I think people can perceive that as us taking a stance, but I think that's any time you get involved in politics, it's really hard to keep that view very pure and pristine, especially in a city like Philly that is so predominantly Democratic.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of facilitating conversation, at the time of this recording, we are in the middle of a very heated national election. To what extent do you go there, or do you keep it local? Do you keep it to Philly?
It's mostly Philly. I mean, we would love for our members to have those conversations, you know, in terms of what happens. And we do have some, like there is one project that it intakes campaign, like real-time election data, where it's like the actual voter ballots that are counted and it visualizes it. And it does do that for both local elections and it's going to do that for the presidential election, I believe. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of, you know, a little bit more on the local side, I would say. And again, that's sort of a data thing. I think people are picking the low-hanging fruit and saying, I have data for this, because Philadelphia has a really robust open data portal. So they can mm-hmm. either get the data they need, or they can use our relationships with the city to say, can we get that data? And we can work really closely with the office that does that here, who has been a great supporter of our work as well. Mm-hmm.
The final question that I have for you is something that I ask virtually everyone that I interview for this podcast, and it's, what's your biggest people-related challenge in your job?
Such a good question. It really is kind of twofold, I suppose. It's setting realistic expectations of volunteers and for volunteers, which is a little bit goes back to that process as the product. And also creating an environment that both lends itself to learning and leadership. That's another kind of topic that I think can be hard to balance both of those needs. We have a lot of people coming in from, you know, a background of either not coding or they're looking to learn to code. So people who are really more on the learning side. Simultaneously, we have folks who are more interested in doing things like mentorship, interested in leadership opportunities or speaking opportunities. So being able to kind of meet very different needs that sometimes feel a little bit in competition. I think that is probably where we're trying to address that challenge very really today, to support, you know, to create support mechanisms that can serve both that learning community as well as that more experienced leadership community.
Mm-hmm. In terms of setting realistic expectations, do you mean that perhaps you need to temper down the expectations sometimes, because sometimes people need to realize that life gets in the way and we can't always kind of get done what we want to get done? Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah, definitely. And also that it doesn't need to get done tomorrow, that this is something that, you know, you can drop off and pick up. And we do everything open source. So you might pick up a project that was midway through and you picked it up and, you know, maybe you work on it for a bit and maybe it never gets done. I think people see some of our big flagship projects that have had a lot of success and they say, oh my gosh, I could never do that. That's so amazing. And it's really kind of, one, that's not always the goal of a project, and two, maybe you do get it done, but those projects didn't happen in a week or a month or even 6 months. Most of those projects took a good, you know, probably 10 to 12 months to properly launch. And we've seen projects that have, you know, taken even, you know, some have taken shorter, some have taken longer. It just really depends on who the team is and what their lives are like. And yeah, so I think the life piece of, like, it's okay to have a life and work and this, you know, people are doing a lot and they're busy. So I think that's a good capture of that.
Yeah. And one of my favorite topics is leadership. It's something that I've been thinking quite a bit about lately. So who do you see, like, if you were to pinpoint a few qualities of the folks who really emerge as leaders in, but just in general, but specifically in Code for Philly, what is it that they do differently, think about differently, that really helps them to emerge as leaders and to remain strong leaders?
I would say the people who are very self-motivated, self-directed, and are not shy about jumping in the middle of something. So, you know, I might be doing, you know, all this work for Code for Philly, and I might be in the middle of a program, and somebody who will do really well at Code for Philly will jump in and say, I think this, this, and this could be better. And then not only do they say, this is what could be better, then they go make it happen.
Yep.
So being incredibly proactive, self-motivated, and the ability to be, you know, pretty committed and follow through on your commitments, that's really the leadership profile for Code for Philly, because time is so limited for even the leadership team, as also being volunteers, it's really hard for the leadership team to hold your hand through anything and keep you going through anything. So people who are really observant, who are looking to learn, looking to help, those are the people who do really well in leadership positions.
Yeah, and I would say, especially because it's a volunteer organization, right? You know, jump in, grab a shovel, you know, come with us, right? Come help.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You don't want the people who are a little, like you said, shy or shy about just basically suggesting something and going and doing it. And it doesn't really matter if it ends up failing, or like maybe even to a bigger extent than in a volunteer organization than versus a non-volunteer organization where there may be more structure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Great. All right. So we're almost up on time. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about, Dawn?
I think that this was great. I'm super excited that this was of interest to other people. I always feel like I'm just kind of like a gum geek in my little corner I nerd out about all this. So
you are in good company.
Excellent. Yes, makes me very happy.
That's great. So it was wonderful talking with you, Dawn.
Likewise.
Okay.